All rise. Court is in session. Call now, 215-263-1079. Court Radio 107.9 WRNB is on. Brought to you exclusively by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com.
Good morning and happy Sunday to you. Welcome to another edition of Court Radio here on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. I'm Tiffany Bacon. I am your co-host. Thank you again for joining us today. As usual, your host, the one and only Mr. Dean Weitzman. He is in the building. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ms. Bacon.
How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Doing well. Just awesome. Got back from Eagan, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
What's and happening in Eagan?
I was about to say that.
Yeah. Well, Eagan is the mothership for My Philly Lawyer's web presence.
Oh, okay.
They're the folks at Westlaw, which is the largest legal publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
They're the folks who helped me create, devise, and put together the My Philly Lawyer website with all that great information. And we made some additions to the website this week.
Oh,
and
cool.
The biggest addition is that we're now doing a My Philly Lawyer blog. We're blogging now. And
nice.
Folks can go to www.MyPhillyLawyerBlog.com. That's My Philly Lawyer and then BLOG.com. And there you'll find that I will be posting once or twice a week some legal topic that I'll be rambling about that you'll have an opportunity to comment on, or more importantly, as it applies to Court Radio, folks can go to the blog to give us some suggestions. If we're not talking about what you want to hear, out there listening now, if we're not talking about what you want to hear, legally speaking, please go to the blog, to MyPhillyLawyerBlog.com, and give us some suggestions, and we may incorporate those suggestions in upcoming shows.
Okay.
So you can actually create some radio by going to the blog and telling us you want to hear about this or that particular legal topic.
Nice. Very, very nice. Well, we do want to remind everybody that this is a legal show. And if you have any legal trouble, if you have a question, singular, you can give us a call right now at 215-263-1079. And Dean is here to assist you. We also have a very special guest in studio, and we will introduce him in just a moment. But keep in mind, if you have any legal questions, now would be the time to call in. 215-263-1079. So, Dean, what is our hot button topic and, of course, our sidebar topics for today?
Well, let's see. Stay off of the Kelly Drive. I understand that there's the Stokesbury Regatta going on. And when I came back from Minnesota yesterday, and I was trying to get my way home, that created somewhat of a problem. So, you, by all means, go and watch the regatta if you'd like, but if you're looking to traverse the city, that's not the way to go.
Right, and on the flip side, Martin Luther King Drive, i.e. West River Drive, you know, it is springtime, so it's shut down for pedestrians, bikers, and things like that, so that is not your quick out through the city either, so you might want to stay away from that. If you hate taking the Schuylkill Expressway, you might want to just find a back road or a back street and just work that out today.
Old school West River Drive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Old school. Older school is East River Drive, which is Kelly Drive.
Exactly.
So, yes, old school. But either way, so
you've,
stay away.
You've been
from
around
that.
A little while.
A little while. Yeah.
Okay.
For
all
a minute.
Right. That's a good thing. We have in the studio with us today Mr. Kenneth Edelin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's taken me, what are we, in May now, and I can actually pronounce and spell his name. So, you know, I'm
consider
learning.
Consider that progress.
There you go. Thank you. Ken is one of the attorneys at My Philly Lawyer, and Ken's specialty is criminal defense. And today's hot button legal topic will be the issue of gun control. We as a society, I think, and certainly the city of Philadelphia, has been involved in way, way, way too much gun violence. And the question that I was thinking about was, do we need more laws? Will more gun control laws reduce the number of gun deaths? And it seems like, I mean, we lose as a country nearly 11,000 30,000 souls a year to gun homicide.
That's way too many.
That's despicable.
That one really, is too many.
One is too many. But I mean, for real, 11,000 people each year lose their life to gun violence. It is our domestic terrorism. Mm-hmm. It is our homegrown domestic terrorism. And it we should be thinking of ways to stop it. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear the advocates of a gun-free society, we'll call mm-hmm. them, the NRA and their likes, will tell you guns don't kill, people do. Guns don't kill, people do. But the fact of the matter is that we're a gun-thirsty society that just can't seem to get enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
In some states, you can pick them up at trade shows and, mm-hmm. and without any serious background checks being conducted.
Mm-hmm.
And they find their way out into the hands of people who have no compunction but to use them on a regular basis. And mm-hmm. it's I don't know. It just seems like it should be enough is enough, you
right.
know. And yet it seems that we're immune to it. It doesn't mean a whole lot when you hear about a gun death or two.
Mm.
You know, it
depends on who you're talking to.
It hardly makes it into the news any longer. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, yeah, if you have 10, 15 or 20 deaths by a single gunman, that's usually newsworthy for a day or two. And if children are involved, it may be a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
But we have become calloused to gun violence, and it needs to be discussed, I think, and we need to find ways as a society to end the violence.
Mm-hmm.
So question is, what are the laws that we have today? And Ken's going to talk about that. And when you've committed a crime, maybe not even having used your weapon, but mm-hmm. when you commit a crime with a gun in Philadelphia or in Pennsylvania, what are the enhancements that event will trigger in the criminal justice system?
Mm.
If you have questions about gun control, if you want to comment on whether you think we have enough laws already and we as a society are defective rather than the laws, please feel free to give us a call today. Tiffany?
And the numbers are 215-263-1079. Feel free to give us a call right now. 215-263-1079.
Thank you. So, Ken, jump right in here.
Well, it seems like the first question is, what do we do? How do we stop it? Is increasing the laws or increasing the number of laws going to help? Or increasing the severity of the penalties going to help? Or do we need to look below the surface and deal with some of the socioeconomic and moral issues that are rampant in some of the communities?
Well, I will say that if we compare the United States to the other free world countries in Europe, we have the highest per capita rate of gun death. There are those who believe that that's because it's easier to find yourself a gun in the United States than it is almost anywhere else. The rate in the United States for gun deaths is like 14 or 15 gun deaths per 100,000 people.
Mm.
And if you look at the opposite end of that spectrum and you look at Japan, now there's a whole lot of, you know, people in Asia, right? They're all crammed together.
Mm-hmm.
They have in Asia per capita, so we're just comparing apples to apples,
right?
They have one half of a person per 100,000. So it takes 200,000 people to get one gun death in Japan, and and in the United States, those same 200,000 people at the end of a year, 29 or 30 of them will be gone. Now, I just, you know.
But is that a result of just the availability of guns, or is that a result of the culture and the reverence of guns and the pervasiveness in the media and movies and music? And
well, they get our movies, you know. I mean, they get our music.
Economic concerns.
No, obviously, all of those socio and economic issues are different. And for frankly, I mean, it's not a, it is a homogenous society. They all are kind of the same. And we come together as different people from different places and different, much greater difference between the people in the United States. Is that a difference? I mean, it is a difference, but does that make a difference in this statistic? I don't know. I do know that if it is, as you say, the way they treat gun violence, the reverence with which they give guns, well, then that's something that we need to change here. Mm-hmm. You know, guns need to become, we need to become more reverent with regard to guns.
Well, we need to become more reverent with regard to human life and the sanctity of human life and respecting yourselves and respecting others so that lives are not taken callously. Lives are not taken frivolously.
Mm.
What is it right now that we have in the way of laws? Okay. And there's some new ones that came down. I mean, the city has is testing the waters with some new laws with regards to their attempts at controlling guns. For instance, if you they have a new law with regard to the straw purchase of a gun, which means that if Tiffany purchases a gun
mm-hmm.
and then gives that gun to me and mm-hmm. I commit a crime with that gun, then she has committed a crime by the purchase and distribution of a gun illegally.
Right. It's called a straw purchase. And it's typically happens when you are unable or ineligible to get a gun. So you go get somebody else to buy the gun for you. And they buy that gun knowing that they're not going to keep it, that they're not going to use it, that they're going to then give it to you. They have committed what's a straw purchase. It's not necessarily a new law, but there's a new emphasis and a new look on it. Because there are a lot of people who get others to buy guns for them because they know they can't have them. And typically that's the criminal element. They can't have the gun because they've committed a prior crime.
Right. And
so they are ineligible.
And that's another law. Anybody who commits a crime punishable by more than 1 year in prison, from that point
convicted.
From that point forward, can no longer legally own a gun.
That's right.
And that's a lifetime ban.
Mm.
And those folks get around that ban by having others who don't have that ban purchase guns for them. But the consequences, we hope now, with the enforcement of that law, the consequences will be substantial for the straw purchaser.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station 107.9 WRNB, brought to you by the Law Offices of Silvis, Langsam & Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. Call in with your legal questions, 215-263-1079, the number to reach us in studio. You can talk about our hot-button legal topic or any other legal question that you may have. Again, the numbers are 215-263-1079.
Thank you, Ms. Bacon.
You're
and
welcome.
Back to you, Mr. Edelin.
So, Dean, just to address the initial question, or one of the initial questions you asked, what are the laws that are on the books now? There are, I guess we can go on two different tracks. In the city of Philadelphia, the main ones you see are 6106, 6108, and 6105. Now, Uniform Firearms Act is what it's called in Philadelphia. So when you are in violation of the Uniform Firearms Act, you will hear people use the term VUFA, V-U-F-A, essentially violation of the Uniform Firearms Act. 6105 is a section that says persons who are prohibited from possessing a gun cannot. 6106, a firearm is not to be carried without a license. And essentially, that's concealed on your person or within a car. And 6108 is carrying a firearm in the city, but it's not concealed. It's out in the open. The 6105... if you have a prior felony conviction, will be graded as a felony of the second degree, which carries a 5 to 10 year stat max. The 6106 is a felony of the third degree, which carries a 3.5 to 7 year statutory maximum sentence. And the 6108 is a misdemeanor of the first degree, which carries a 2.5 to 5 year stat max.
And what was 6108?
6108 is a misdemeanor of the first degree. That's carrying a gun, or that's possessing a firearm, not concealed, but within the city limits of Philadelphia.
I see. So sort of like
down the
Dirty Harry-like.
Right.
Okay.
That's only a misdemeanor. You can walk down the street with a gun in your hand. That's a misdemeanor. But if you hide it under your shirt, that's the felony.
Gotcha.
Or in the car, that's the felony.
Okay.
Wow.
There are also federal laws which apply, obviously, across the nation. The two main ones that we need to be concerned about are 922G, which is a person not eligible who is possessing a gun. Typically, that's a somebody with a prior felony conviction or a conviction of a year or more, and they possess a gun, they are not able. And just as a caveat, in the federal system, it's not just a gun, it's also the bullets. So if you have a prior conviction and you possess bullets, you are in violation of 922G. You're in violation of a federal law. There is also 924C, which is a mandatory consecutive sentence if you possess a gun while you are committing a crime of violence or drug trafficking offense. You are added, whatever your federal guideline sentence is, they are enhanced by an additional 5-year consecutive sentence if you're in violation of 924C.
And does the state have an enhancement for the commission of a crime with a gun?
In the state system, there is also an enhancement for 5 years, and I should just add the caveat. In the federal system, merely possessing the gun gets you the 5-year enhancement. If you display the gun during this crime of violence or drug trafficking, it's a 7-year enhancement. And if you actually discharge the gun, it's a 10-year enhancement. And again, those are consecutive sentences.
And are those minimum mandatories?
They are indeed.
So even the judge has no discretion in that regard.
The judge does not. And I would just also add the additional caveat. If you have more than one 924C, the second one is actually a 25-year consecutive sentence to the first one as well as the underlying offense. So, for example, if you have a string of bank robberies and they charge you with more than one 924C, your guidelines, your mandatory minimums go through the roof very quickly.
And that's all on the federal side?
That's the federal side.
And what about the state?
The state side is the 5-year.
5-year.
Yes, sir.
And again, that's a minimum mandatory. We talk, we've heard that. If you commit a crime in Philadelphia and you're prosecuted for that crime and you've used a gun in the commission of that crime, you have a minimum mandatory 5-year additional sentence.
That's correct, to whatever the underlying guidelines carry.
Okay.
So, for example, if your underlying offense carries a guideline range of 3 years, 3 to 6 years, and you get that, you also will have 5 years tacked on to that.
Mm.
So obviously, it makes the stakes much higher. It makes the prison exposure much higher.
All right.
And hopefully it makes folks think.
We have a caller.
Yes, we do. This is Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station 107.9 WRNB. If you have a legal question, give us a call, 215-263-1079. We have Teresa calling in from Cheltenham. Teresa, good morning. You are live on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was calling to find out. I was taking 911 in the ambulance, and when they were taking me, the guy was explaining to me, like, well, what did you really take? Are you going to come clean with us now, or are you going to wait till you get to the hospital to tell the doctor what the real problem was? I didn't like that. Not only that, I had on a nightgown with no panties, and they never gave me a sheet. I didn't get a sheet until I actually got into the emergency room.
Okay, and your question is?
Like, well, how can I pursue it? Because I felt like that was a violation. I was kind of paranoid to even ask them anything in the ambulance because how I was being treated.
I would say in that instance, though, that the best avenue to pursue that complaint is to make a complaint. File a written complaint with the City of Philadelphia or the fire department, and lay out what happened and let them investigate those EMS operators and get to the bottom of it. If there was a violation of their guidelines, their code of ethics, then they'll deal with that internally. I don't think that rises to the level of a civil cause of action that you would pursue with an attorney. I think it's more appropriate for you to have registered that complaint and allow them to go through the complaint process and if necessary, be punished or retrained internally.
Okay.
Thank you for calling. Have a great day.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Don't forget to give us a call, 215-263-1079. Dean?
So, what is your position? Do you think we have enough laws? Can we tighten it up? I mean, is the current laws sufficient or should be sufficient if we add in this other aspect where we as a society raise our cumulative voices and say enough is enough?
Well, and I guess let's take a step back and let's get to the, I guess, the root of the tension. What we know is that the Second Amendment guarantees everybody the right to bear arms and the right to form a militia. Obviously, the states have to balance that with the protection of their citizenry. So that's where the initial conflict comes in. That's where the initial tension or the tug of war comes in. The question in my mind is always, if we tighten the gun laws, if let's say we make it illegal for anybody to carry a gun, what that means is law-abiding citizens will not carry a gun. But also what that means is those who choose not to follow the law will carry guns. They will have guns because you're not going to be able to ban all of the guns. What I think has to happen is we have to get into the communities, into the schools, into the media and retrain, resensitize, reinstitute moral values, respect for self, respect for others, so that we are not frivolously, nonchalantly, callously taking lives.
But if you look at other societies where actually the possession of a gun is very difficult, while yes, there are still gun deaths and there are criminals still have some access to guns, they don't have the same access that we have here. It's not, I mean, here it's almost like, you know, a bubblegum machine.
Right. You can get it. You can probably get one on most corners.
Right.
In the city.
And maybe it'll take a while for that, you know.
And what I would say is that that allows for and that sets up the atmosphere for many more accidental deaths or many more deaths that happened because a conflict has escalated to that point that if the guns weren't easily accessible, they wouldn't be in a possession and therefore these deaths wouldn't happen. So I certainly agree with you on that point. And I certainly we need to get all of the illegal guns off the streets. I certainly agree that it needs to be more difficult for people to get their hands on guns.
Well, okay.
I
see the Constitution as a living, breathing document.
Absolutely.
Okay. I am not a Clarence Thomas. I am not an Antonin Scalia. I do not believe that we need to vigorously adhere to the written word that was written 200 and some
right.
years ago.
It has to grow. It has to breathe. It has to adapt with the time.
So merely because the Second Amendment of the Constitution indicates that we have a right to bear arms, that can be interpreted many different ways. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it should be interpreted in a manner in which it is very, very, very difficult to acquire most guns. I mean, okay, rifles, if you're a hunter, long rifles, single shot rifles, fine. Shotguns, again, if you're a hunter, fine. But, you know, Desert Eagles and, you know, 45s and these, you know, semi-automatic weapons. And it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, we put our and then we put our police in harm's way as well. You know,
I think the police will tell you that they're often outgunned.
Yeah. Yeah, and
I think they'll tell you that the firepower on the street is often much more than what they have.
And that's not right.
I don't know. I'm not sure just restricting it to hunters so folks can run around with rifles and shotguns is the answer either.
Well, like I said, I mean, in this instance, I think more restriction is better. You know, maybe my slash and burn idea with regard to guns isn't the way to go. But, you know, if you're going to, I don't think you can, err on the side of restriction in this instance. I mean, okay, so maybe if we become too restrictive, we can add it back later.
I don't disagree that there needs to be restrictions, and I don't disagree that there need to be as many guns taken off of the street as possible.
Mm-hmm.
My only issue is that there has to be an education, there has to be a sensitivity, there has to be an affording of positive opportunities for the communities so that they are not tempted, so that they don't see the only way out is getting a gun and protecting their turf or doing harm to others or trying to take what you have because they can't figure out where they're going to get their next meal from.
Right.
If you're just tuning in, this is Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. If you're listening and you're wondering what to do if you or someone close to you are involved in an automobile accident, slip and fall, personal injury, or medical malpractice, simply contact the law offices of Silver Slangsman Weitzman, the home of My Philly Lawyer. With over 100 years of combined experience, they will aggressively fight for you. Call now for a free personal consultation. And remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. For answers to those questions and more, call them at 215-227-2727. That's 215-227-2727. Or you can visit them online at MyPhillyLawyer.com. Can't wait for tomorrow? You can call us now and Dean can help you best he can with your question. 215-263-1079. Going to the phones, we have Derek calling in from Philadelphia. Derek, good morning. You are live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. My question is, I was convicted of a felony 6 years ago. Am I banned for life purchasing a handgun?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I am?
That's it. That's it. That's the easy answer. You are banned for life for any conviction of a crime which could have put you in jail for more than a year. You don't even need to have served more than a year. But if the potential penalty was greater than 1 year, you are then banned for life for carrying any weapon.
How about purchasing?
Purchasing, carrying, being around, being in the same room as.
Right. You cannot be in possession of a weapon.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. Thank you. Also, we have Thomas calling in from Philadelphia with an opinion and a question. Thomas, good morning. You're live on the air.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, Thomas.
Good cloudy morning.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay. I had an opinion. My opinion is, first of all, the penalties, I don't think they're right because of the simple fact of 5 to 6 or 7 years. The area that I live in southwest Philly near the 52nd and Market area, ain't nothing but guns all up around there. And people are killing each other over who said, I said, drugs. The main thing is drugs. It's crazy out here. You got to be scared. I mean, you really are scared to walk the streets.
So, Thomas, what's
the
answer?
Behind you. That's something I've never done before in my life.
Thomas, what's the answer?
What's the answer to that?
Since you were right there in the neighborhood, what's the answer?
I think they need to put more stricter laws or threaten the people with electric chair or gas chamber, life for a life. That's the way I really feel about it. Because
the death penalty is already.
Guns against each other stupidly. They're killing each other for no reason at all.
I agree. But the question is, what's the answer? I agree with you, but the question is, what's the answer? The death penalty is already on the books. They're still killing every day.
But they're not pushing it. They're not pushing it because if they was really pushing it, it would stop a whole lot of people. You would think, before you pull a gun, you would think.
Thomas, believe me, this district attorney's office is pushing the death penalty.
Here's my thought on it, Thomas.
Okay.
By the time somebody already takes a life, that's already beyond where I want to intervene. I want to intervene when somebody gets caught without committing a crime, but merely in possession of an illegal gun, one of the misdemeanors, okay, or a felony that ordinarily, if they didn't have a prior record, they might get a probationary sentence for the possession of a firearm.
I wouldn't do that. You should do the mandatory time.
See, Thomas, I want to intervene.
If you was responsible to have the gun, and you're responsible to take whatever you're going to do with that gun, then you should be responsible enough to take the full time. I wouldn't have no kind of mercy with them under no type of circumstance. You got children out here walking the street, playing, and they're catching a bullet for no reason at all. And they're innocent.
Thomas,
which
is why I'm saying I think we need to intervene long before they get their hands on a gun. I think we intervene way before that, when they're children, so they understand the value of a life. They understand the value of going out, getting a job, and working hard. They understand the value of living morally long before they ever decide to pick the gun up.
And what I would do is when as Thomas says, when they get caught involved in a crime with a gun, or they just get caught possessing a gun, they haven't used that gun yet. They just have it. That's when we need to have some serious, take them and bring them into a some sort of program that will take them and make them become community activists or serve the community in a way that brings them some learning experience and gets them out of that environment and puts them to work for society in a productive fashion, maybe for a year, maybe 2 years. Have them building roads. Have them, you know, we have an infrastructure in this country that is literally falling apart. We need better highways. We need better roadways. We need better the plumbing of America is in disrepair. And so there's plenty of need. And Michelle Obama said this week at her first commencement speech, you know, it's time to remember to give back. OK, well, when we got all these criminals, all these kids running around with guns and they get caught, make them give back. Take them out
like a picnic to them. The average ones, they go to jail. They get out.
No. Not jail. See, jail is where they learn their trade and they harbor ill intent. I wouldn't bring them to jail. I'd bring them to Topeka, Kansas, and have them building roads or putting in pipes or something for 2 years. That's what I would do.
All right, Thomas, I want to say thank you so much for your opinion and for listening to us here at Court Radio, and thank you for your call.
And thank you.
All right, have a great day.
Take care, Tom.
You too.
This is Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station 107.9 WRNB. We do welcome your calls, your comments on today's topic, or your legal questions, even if it is off topic. We welcome those this morning. 215-263-1079. Greg is calling in from the East Falls section of Philadelphia. Greg, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. How y'all doing there?
Doing
good morning, Greg.
I didn't hear your initial topic, but I do have a question on why on tort law versus I know what tort is and limited tort, but why is it that some lawyers don't take limited tort, although you see advertisements from some lawyers. Some lawyers won't take limited tort because it's limited, and I kind of understand that to a large degree of when you can sue and when you can and how to limit you and anybody in your car, but
all right, well, here, let me answer that question. Let me answer that question from a My Philly lawyer perspective. We don't have a blanket rule at my office that we will take or not take limited tort cases. We evaluate each case on a case-by-case basis. And some of the things that I look for when I'm looking at a limited tort case is, was there substantial property damage and significant injury? Was the innocent person prevented from doing their normal job duties, and do they have a wage loss? These are the questions to really get into, because limited tort doesn't limit all cases. It merely limits the weakest cases, those cases where the injuries are nominal, where they're soft tissue injuries, sprains and strains that ultimately in a few months get better. And so, you know, if you've got one of those little fender bender accidents where there's a few hundred dollars in property damage and you have a couple of complaints but nothing serious, then if you're limited tort, you're not going to make a recovery in that case, and we won't take your case. I'm not going to set up false expectations and have people, when I take their case, they expect that some good will come from that. And if no good can, if I believe at the outset that no good's going to come from my representation, then I won't take the case. But if there is a chance, because of the severity of the injuries, then we at My Philly Lawyer will take a limited tort case.
Can I ask you a follow-up question? Has the Superior Court or some court actually clarified the limited tort law and made it a little bit more definitive, or, you know, a lot
Listen,
easier. Not to say that people don't have prejudice, but I guess if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, I do.
I do, and
I'm going to answer it. I'm going to answer your question right now. The Superior Court and the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania are working towards a definition of what a serious impairment is, but it's never something which is clear, which is you know, a bright line, okay? It's always going to be somewhat confusing and somewhat, you know, where for one person an injury may be serious and for another person that same injury may not. If you're a construction worker or a violin player and you have an injury to your hand, that may be a very serious injury. But if you're a teacher and you don't need the use of your hands as much as somebody who's a violin player or a construction worker, then that same injury wouldn't be serious. So it is dependent on facts specific to your case. And that's where you've given up something by taking this limited tort, because now a decision is going to be made by somebody else. Somebody is going to have to make a decision about your life. And you didn't have to have it that way if you chose the full tort. And one last thing, you said that limited tort would apply to yourself and those in your car, and that's not correct. Limited tort applies to you, the policyholder, and your own resident relatives. But if me, as your friend, am in your car, I'm not bound by your limited tort merely because I'm in your car. I could be full tort in your car, and you could be limited tort. These questions come up all the time. And what I would say to everybody is, if when in doubt, call us to get the answer. Because some people think they're limited tort and they're not. They were hit by an out-of-state driver. They were hit by a drunk driver. They got serious injuries. Others think they're full tort because they say, Dean, I have full coverage. I'm full tort. And no, one is not mean that you know, full coverage does not mean full tort, but we can get into that later. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is, call us. We'll give you the answer quick and short.
Yep. Thank you very much.
All right. Be
Thanks
well.
A lot, Greg. All right. We also have Barbara calling in from Northeast Philadelphia. Barbara, good morning. You are live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning, Barbara.
Police investigation. My son is an ex-felon who was working and had a good job, and he was arrested on a warrant based on a picture of him having braids, and he hasn't had braids in 5 years. And the only recourse we have now is to pay like $5,000 for a lawyer, because we don't have the $7,500 to get him out of jail based on his bail. Like, how can we help him when we know that if they would just look at his recent driver's license, he didn't have braids. When he was incarcerated, he didn't have braids 2 years ago. And they arrested him on a case where someone said that they had braids, and they picked out a picture with braids, and he's sitting in jail now risking losing his job. And they like saying, well, a public defender saying, well, if your family don't pay the $7,500 to get you out on bail, you'll sit there till August, because that's when our next court date comes around. What can we do?
Well, and the problem is, once you get caught up in the legal system, we hear these stories all too often. What we would have hoped would have happened is that at the preliminary hearing, which has to be scheduled soon after the arrest,
he has that Monday.
The preliminary hearing is Monday?
Yes.
Okay, well, then it is at that time that you want to bring up the discrepancy and show the new pictures, show the new driver's license, show the recent pictures to show that the person, the ID is flawed, that the person has picked out the wrong individual. I would have the public defender in the room ask for a lineup, preserve a lineup issue so that your son is not brought out into the courtroom and standing next to an attorney where the only person there to identify would be your son. And I would protect his identity. I would not have him brought into the courtroom until after an independent lineup was made. And then I would have the public defender's office gather this information, and you need to help them. Make sure that they get the recent pictures. Make sure that they get the recent driver's license photo so that they can show the comparison and that they can show that the ID is flawed. All right?
Okay,
but the initial thing is...
enough for the detective to just say, let me get a more recent picture, or they got his address obviously from his license. Why couldn't they just look and say he don't have braids on here?
You would certainly hope that that's what they would do.
But the converse
is going to be they're going to say he committed the crime with braids and then went home and cut his hair to conceal his identity. So you have to be proactive. You can't just wait for them.
That's over. The opportunity for them to have done the right thing is gone. Now you need to be proactive, is what Ken's saying. Now it's time for you to get in there tomorrow and provide some photographs to the public defender and ask them to preserve the lineup.
Again, at this point, the most important thing is to preserve the lineup issue. And the public defender in the room knows that. They've been doing this far, far too long not to know that.
All right, Barbara, thank you so much. And
defendant told him, well, you could have cut your hair. And never even asked if he had any photos. My son is telling him, I got a driver's license you can pull up. And the public defender's like, oh, well, you'll sit there until August. Don't worry about it.
That's not the case. You'll be in court tomorrow. They can bring up the identity issue tomorrow. And again, just be sure to preserve the lineup issue. Don't have him brought into the courtroom until after a judge makes a determination on whether or not there should be a lineup.
All right, Barbara, best of luck to you. And thank you so much for calling us here at Court Radio.
Thank you.
All right, then. You are listening to Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station 107.9 WRNB. Now, remember, if you've been injured from an automobile accident, a slip and fall, work-related mishap, or medical negligence, call the attorneys at Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. Don't you give it a second thought. You can just call for your free personal consultation. And just remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. So just keep that in mind. They have over 100 years of combined experience, and let them aggressively fight for you. You just sit back and get well. Call now at 215-227-2727. That's 215-227-2727. Or you can visit their informative website at MyPhillyLawyer.com. Can't wait till tomorrow. You can give us a call today, 215-263-1079.
And don't forget, we have our new My Philly Lawyer blog, and you can attend it at www.myphillylawyerblog.com, where you'll be able to comment on my legal topics during the week and also propose your own for upcoming court radio shows.
Awesome. All right. If you want to give us a call now, feel free to do so. You can talk about our hot button topic or ask any legal question that you may have. Again, the number to reach us in studio, 215-263-1079. We have Tracy calling in from North Philadelphia. Tracy, good morning. You are live on the air with Court Radio.
Hi, this is Tracy.
Hi, Tracy.
Good morning.
What's your question?
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. What's your question, ma'am?
Okay, my question is, how is it legal for the city to hand out tickets for recycling when your trash is out on the sidewalk for the public to tamper with?
So what you're saying is that somebody snuck in a bottle into your trash. Is that what you're saying? You got a ticket?
That could possibly happen. Like,
oh, sure.
You get trash outside and you go to work. Who's to say someone didn't take their trash bag in front of your house or put trash inside your trash bag? So how is it legal for them to write out tickets for $25 and above when you have no proof that that actual bag was how you left it when you set it outside?
Yeah, well, they can write the tickets. That doesn't mean the ticket's going to stick. Of course, for $25, it would probably cost you more to go down and fight the ticket than the ticket's worth. But that's certainly your prerogative. I'm sure that there's a process, although I have to admit I'm not sure how that process works. But I'm sure there's a process, like any summary offense, any ticket, for you to go down and actually fight it and say, that wasn't my bottle in the trash. And they would probably toss the ticket out.
Mm-hmm. But that's so like you have so many people, if your trash is out there for the public, for you to keep getting tickets for whatever reason and to keep taking time off of work to go for a hearing because you don't want to pay the $25.
How many tickets have you gotten?
I only got one thus far.
Okay.
I've done it. I've put trash outside and not think about recycling it. And not thinking of not recycling, but not thinking that I'm going to get somebody else a ticket if I put this in a trash bag, just because I'm just, you got lazy people out there who don't want to recycle. They don't want to take the time to recycle stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
they just want to throw their trash outside.
All right, Tracy. Well, good luck with that, sweetie. I hope you can handle that. And thank you for your call. Thank you for listening to us this morning.
All right, thank you.
All right. See you,
Tracy. Bye-bye. We also have John calling in from Northeast Philadelphia. John, good morning. You are live in the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. I just wanted to call in response to Thomas's call. I just think that the one gentleman really kind of hit the nail right on the head by saying there have to be other preventive techniques. I think that when you have no options, when you have no direction, no guidance, the result is going to be what we've had so far. But to get on the air and to promote the death penalty, to promote maximum sentences, to even get on the air and promote concepts such as working with your hands as opposed to giving opportunity, giving hope, talking about reading opportunities, talk about educational opportunities, addressing those fundamental issues. Because a lot of times what we're talking about kids who have no direction for years on end, and then they have, the only direction they have is the rap music, is what they see around them, and their lack of hope and their lack of direction, so they go pick up a gun. And I don't think, and actually history has shown, the last 20 years, the prison sentences and the swing of the law over the last 20 years have demonstrated that throwing someone in jail, which the one gentleman said that's what this district attorney office is looking for, the death penalty, maximum penalty. I don't even understand with proper education and with the proper documentation of the way history has gone, how you could even say that and be proud of that. How is that a strategic way to address the fundamental problem, to go on air and to say, we're seeking the death penalty, we're seeking maximum jail time? I mean, it might sound good to those that have not studied, and that's no disrespect to Thomas. It might sound good to those that are suffering with the symptoms of the problem instead of dealing with the root of the problem. That might sound all well and good. But honestly, if you've done any reading, if you've done any studying, you know good and well that that does not solve the problem. It only accrues more votes.
All right. Thank you for your opinion. And I think there's some validity to it, and it certainly comports with Ken's analysis that we need to push for education, sensitivity, and, you know,
opportunities.
And opportunities. My point is merely this, and that, you know, I don't know that they have any more hope and opportunities and sensitivity in other parts of the world where gun violence is not like it is here. I don't want to wait until there's been a commission of a serious crime that somebody needs to go away for life. I merely say that we need to intervene often and early. And if there's any opportunity before it gets to be a serious issue, we need to be very proactive with the sentencing and not put people in jail. I'm suggesting that people need to become use it as an opportunity to get the sensitivity, use it as an opportunity to get the learning and the opportunities to grow from that experience.
And just real quick, sir, I mean, I appreciate the term sensitivity, but I think really systematic education is more appropriate. It's not a matter of, oh, we feel sorry for these people. We need to be sensitive towards these people. What it is we need to constructively look for ways to educate these people and give them real opportunity.
No. You misinterpret. I'm not saying that we need to be sensitive to them. I'm saying that we need to teach them sensitivity. They need to know what it means when they've committed a crime with a gun or that they even possess a gun. If you look at Europe, and we use an analogy of, let's say, DUIs, there's very, very, very few DUIs in the rest of the world in comparison to the United States. We have no sensitivity to the effects of alcohol and a 4,000-pound piece of metal. Yet in Europe, if they get involved in a DUI, they could lose their license for years. They don't get involved in DUIs. You don't see it like you see it here. We have no sensitivity to what effects we have on our brothers and sisters who are out there. And that's the sensitivity I want to inculcate in the potential criminal with a gun. I don't want to be sensitive to him.
Right. It's the sensitivity of valuing somebody else's life. It's the sensitivity of valuing your life.
That's the key, sir. Value. I'm not sure if it's sensitivity or it's value. Right. If you don't have opportunity, if you don't have anything else to do or anywhere else to go, if your long-term view is not there, then yes, you're right. Your sensitivity for life will be affected. But more importantly, your value for life will be affected.
But I think we also have to agree, and I think you would agree with me, that we have to get the easy access of guns. We have to do something to curb that as well.
Myself, as an educated African-American male, that works in this workforce, there has been a serious dichotomy between what I value and what others value, between what others take for granted and what I have to take as a right or as a privilege. There's a huge difference there. If you close that gap, I'm sure what you term as sensitivity would be accrued as well.
I agree that we have to close that gap, but the converse is that in the meantime, we still have to get the easy access of guns off the street. You cannot have access to a gum like you have access to bubble gum or soda.
Mm. All right, John, I wanted to say thank you for your call. Thank you for your comments. And, of course, thank you for listening to us here.
Thank you for your passion, John.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You know, Tiffany, we have just thrown the double dipping out the window today. But, you know, sometimes the topic is so important mm-hmm. and so impassioned that we have to really dig a little deeper.
Right. Because, I mean, this is something that affects everyone. And, you know, you got to allow people with passion to speak their passion.
There you go.
Tiff, right. You want to give us the answer?
I don't have an answer. I really don't. I'm looking for someone to come up with an answer because it's beyond frightening. It's disgusting. It's despicable. And just even in the case with the two young men who shot the two young men, in South Philly, I think it was in South Philly, and they weren't even the intended targets, but they shot them anyway.
And knew they weren't the intended target.
Right, and they knew it. It wasn't like, oh, my bad, I shot you and figured out you were the wrong person. They knew it before they pulled the trigger and pulled the trigger anyway.
And I think that goes back to the value of life, not respecting life,
right.
Not honoring life, not respecting and loving yourself enough to where that you can just that callously and that recklessly and that uncaringly mm-hmm. end somebody's life because you don't right. understand that is final.
That
you
it
understand
means...
the effect mm-hmm. that it has on their family.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I also understand Thomas's frustration. If you're out there every day, you can't walk your grandchildren to the park mm-hmm. because there are bullets flying, you want immediate remedies.
Right.
You want everybody locked up so I can take my grandbaby to the park.
Right.
So I understand that frustration as well.
Yeah.
We have some more callers to attend to. We have time running out.
Yes. If you're just tuning in, this is Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station 107.9 WRNB. This is Mose calling in from West Philadelphia. Good morning. You were live on the air with Court Radio.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to know, can a convicted felon serving life own real property, such as a house or apartments, while he's in prison?
Yes.
And have the same rights as me?
Yes. There's nothing which would prevent a convicted felon from owning property while he's serving life.
And so he can, from prison, execute evictions and such things like that from his property.
Yes.
On his property.
Yes. Yes.
You know, obviously he has to go through the same legal channels that anybody else would have to go through in terms of family tenant or landlord tenant and all of that.
Okay.
But there's nothing that would prohibit him from being able to do that I know of.
Great, because I called around and there were even some of these advocacy places. They didn't have the answer. I just wonder, what do you get? How do you know that so confidently? Is there some code I could cite or something?
No, there's no code. When our rights, when we have a deprivation of rights, when, for instance, the in the case of handguns, when we say that a felon cannot own a handgun, and that's a lifetime ban. There is a law that prohibits that felon from owning a handgun. If there's no law that is out there that would deprive you of the right of owning property, then you're entitled to own property. That it is the fundamental right of the United States that you have certain rights, and in order to not have those rights, they must have laws which specifically forbid it. You don't start out by saying that because you're a felon, you have no rights, and then you have to have laws that give you those rights. In any case, our lovely producer, Red Chris, has given me the 4-minute sign. We have to move on.
Lovely.
And I thank you for your
lovely.
Interest.
I know. I didn't know Chris was lovely. Thank you so much, Mose, for calling in.
Well, that's just to go along with, you know, Ken's honoring and you know, valuing life. And yeah. He is lovely. And he
wow.
he produces lovely stuff here
lovely
every
man.
Sunday.
Feels so lovely.
Yes.
That's very interesting.
Go ahead.
Okay. We also have Hector calling in from North Philadelphia. Hector, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
How you doing?
Doing fine. How are you?
Good morning, Hector.
Good morning to you. Basically, what I was trying to figure out, now I'm 44 years old. I done been through a whole lot of stuff now out here on the street. A lot of people, what they basically don't understand, it's not the education that they learn in school, because right now there's just no kids left behind. So it don't matter the level of education you have. It's just that they are educated about the whole problem with the street. A lot of them figure, you know, if they carry a gun, you know, like myself, if they carry a gun, that, hey, I'm protected, so somebody run up on me. Oh, no, use your head if somebody run up on you. Run the day to live tomorrow. You know, basically, I don't carry no gun. Sometimes I want to, because I be hearing about people want to do things to me, but I just leave it in the hands of God.
Heck,
God. What they need is like, well, when I was growing up, I graduated from grads. Now, they gave me an opportunity to be something. I mean, during the 80s, the drugs, seeing a lot of friends die, a lot of people go to jail, a lot of things that turned out of it. I said, well, let me stay with my skill, because if I want to be a millionaire, it's not going to happen overnight, but I will be a millionaire one day on this life. Because actually, everybody's been at least a million in their lifetime. So what they're really searching for is not out there, you know what I mean, that quick money and this and that and the third. They
all
need
right.
to just be more educated about, you know, carrying the guns, and they let them think before they act. Like you said, get to them before they pull that gun.
You got to get to them early. You got to get to them often. You have to install values. You have to provide social and economic opportunities. And you have to provide education, both formal and informal. I agree with you, Hector. Thank you so much for your call.
Very welcome.
All right. Thank you, Tiffany. Sorry for stepping on you. We've had an unbelievable response to today's show.
Yes.
We need to begin to wrap it up. My Philly lawyer has one more question in the studio, no doubt. No doubt. In the studio from Brother E.
Good morning. How are you
all?
It's good to see you this beautiful Sunday morning.
Yes, good morning, sir.
I wrote in here and I thought, you know, Court Radio's on, and it must be Dean's presence that has stopped the rain, because it stopped raining and now it looks like it might be sunny today. I don't know what's going on. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Doing well.
I was listening coming in and I heard you guys talking about gun violence and, you know, what happens when people have guns and all that. Made me think about my man Plexico, who's another fatal, blew up his career over shooting himself in the leg, over trying to beat us on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah.
So let's just cut to the chase. Does Plexico go to prison, or do the Jets get a chance to play in the NFL and win? I'm just curious, because you know what?
We have to preface
That's quite a price to pay for shooting your own self in the leg, but the New York statute says...
Exactly. So right now, the answer is, will he go to jail in Philadelphia, or will he go to jail in New York City? And
why would he go to jail in Philly?
No. I'm saying it's going to be a different outcome.
It's a different application of the laws.
Because the laws aren't the same in New York as they are here.
New York is a lot more stringent.
Okay, this is the Puffy law, as I understand it, right? This is the law. I mean, you all know what I mean, right?
Right. It was on the books before Puffy. But New York is much more stringent. You're not to have an illegal gun. You're not to possess a gun. And even if you're dumb enough to shoot yourself, shame on you.
Mm.
But, you know, Plaxico has a lot of money, has a lot of profile.
Yeah,
he'll bring in the high power ones.
Mayor Mike Bloomberg says, my political dead body.
Wow. And that is our walking music, fellas.
Philly Speaks.
Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins.
We will continue the dialogue in
all
a
right.
second, y'all.
Yes.
I'm gonna give a shout out to my kids. I know they're up listening. What's happening, y'all?
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming in, Dean. As always, good to see you. Much love to our producer, Red Chris. Please make sure you keep your radio locked. Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins is coming up next. Have a peaceful, positive, and productive week. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tiffany.
To download or hear more Court Radio podcasts, log on to 1079wrnb.com or mediafire.com/courtradio.